Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
Gotcha!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, the Lean Tunes Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hallam, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmitz, and because we hadn't looked at any in a while, we are venturing back into the world of Pepe Le Pew cartoons. Because, like, I feel like there are some that we really like, and then there are others where we don't get it, and we have to say, like, hey, it's not cool to... It's not cool to maybe say he's needs to be brought back if he's going to be acting like this. And so, like, we haven't been, it's a very inconsistent character, which is weird because he does the same thing basically every time. And so we want to find more interesting depictions of him. And I think we succeeded today.
Yes, we did. Because we have three Pepe Le Pew cartoons that take, okay, two of them take a different approach to the character, and one...
Yeah, there's only one normal one there.
Yeah, it's like, we're like one, and that's at the end of the show. Yeah. So we're not going like, oh, here's what Pepe Le Pew cartoon normally is. Here's two obstructions. No,
we're ending.
We're going backwards.
Yeah.
Going backwards. Ugh. But yeah, it's fascinating stuff this week. So the cartoons we are looking at today are... Odor of the Day, Really Scent, ending with Wild About You.
No, it's Wild Over You. You see, here's the thing.
Oh.
I tried to help, and you're like, no, I got this, and you get it wrong.
We're not covering the sitcom Mad About You.
Wild Over You, is it? And it's not Runamarink either.
Okay.
Thankfully, I have the first one, so you don't need to get them wrong. Odor of the Day is technically a Pepe Le Pew cartoon. It was released on October 2nd, 1948. This was interesting. I feel like I say that usually when I dig up something horrifying. No, this is not horrifying. I found a really interesting birthday phenomena because, first of all, there's two, born on this day, Indian actress Persis Khambada, who had a lot of roles in the 70s and 80s in bad Hollywood filmmaking, most notably playing a character in Star Trek The Motion Picture from 1979. She plays the character that is sort of inhabited by V'ger and sort of is the central MacGuffin computer type. And her wooden acting doesn't really help things, but she is gorgeous in that movie. And so if that was it, just one Star Trek actor being born on this day, then I wouldn't pay any mind. But she's not the only Star Trek actor born on October 2nd, 1948. Because
really?
Avery Brooks, who would famously play in Deep Space Nine. I'm totally not pulling up his character name because I've forgotten it. No. Commander Benjamin Sisko, the captain and lead on that show. Like, I mean, yes, he's done other things. Like, he was most famously, he was on the show Spencer for Hire as Spencer's sidekick, Hawk, who would show up and go... he would show up inevitably every episode and go, Spencer! They did an I Love the 80s on Spencer for Hire. And somebody, I think Hal Sparks or somebody was like, you know, I would watch that on. You know, I mean, there's not really, really many opportunities to go back and watch that these days. But when I do, when I catch a rewind, I'm just, all right, Spencer! And then And then he got his own show called A Man Called Hawk without Spencer. So whose name does he call? But yeah, Avery Hawk? Brooks. me. Avery Brooks, the second Star Trek actor born on that day, along with Persis Kambada. It's weird. Yeah, it's weird that there's two of them. It just proves there's been a lot of principal actors that have been in Star Trek. So,
yeah.
I thought that was interesting. Odor of the Day was Arthur Davis did this one. His unit did this one, which is cool because we haven't really covered one of his in a while. This is written by Lloyd Turner.
It's an early type prototype short, I guess, for Pepe Le Pew because the character looks like Pepe Le Pew, except he doesn't speak. So we don't know if he's French.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one thing. Like, I feel like this was around when they were trying to make Pepe a character, and I think, like, Arthur Davis took a spin on it. But I think his interpretation of what Pepe should be and what the hook of the character was different than what people like Chuck and McKimson were thinking around that time. And it's interesting how this one goes, because there's little to no dialogue at all in this one. But the thing is that with the Davis unit, you can see why they didn't think they needed the dialogue. So the setup of this one is basically that it is I love the design of this dog because the way the motion works in this, the dog's cheeks flap when he moves, and he's just like a very funny looking sort of mangy brown dog, and not mangy, but just like a bulldog, but like more warped and more characterized. I like that. But yeah, no, the first couple seconds of this is basically, you know, it's winter, and the dog is trying to figure out a place to stay as it gets very cold. They're very simple gags to start this one, but the speed and intensity of them make them work. Like you have the dog hiding in a hawk's nest, and the hawk just slams the dog repeatedly under the ground after flying in like a World War II plane.
I especially like the turtle gag because, one, it kind of reminded me of Cecil the Turtle. I don't know.
Just a little.
That's just my headcanon. It's like, yeah, that's Cecil the Turtle. He has a brief cameo as the dog has snuck into the turtle's shell, which I found very funny.
Yeah. Like, there's just a bunch of quick blackout gags. Like, the turtle one is great because you black out before the little sheepish look the dog gives the turtle after he pops him out of the shell. Like, hey. That's good. But yeah, it's a simple enough setup where the dog finds a place to stay that only has like a be back in an hour note on the door, and has a warm bed and a fireplace, but it ends up being Pepe Le Pew's house, you know, before he actually ends up being Pepe Le Pew. Pre-Pepe.
I'll say this. This is such a contested issue, apparently, where, like, Jerry Beck says that this is Pepe Le Pew. This is Arthur Davis' version of Pepe Le Pew. It's very weird. That's what I'm going by. You know, if he says Pepe Le Pew, then I'm going to go with Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah, but, like, I think the issue is that because it's so early in the character's run that there wasn't really a consistent, established character to him, I don't think
Because before this,
you have his first appearance where he's a skunk that speaks in a French accent but actually ends up being, you know, a Brooklynite with a wife and a family. And then you have, you know, going into For Sentimental Reasons where we actually get a full-on character run. But this is before they really knew what the recurring hook for Pepe would be other than, well, he's a skunk. And I think that a lot of the problems with this short arise because they don't know what Pepe is yet. Because how this short is basically designed is the fact that, you know, every attempt the dog makes to either get rid of Pepe or make it so that he's not smelling Pepe ends up going awry somehow, and Pepe is not only aware of his odor, but uses it as a weapon in order to try and get solitude. And the key phrase you may be noticing there is that he is aware of his odor. Where if you go through any other Pepe cartoon after this one, from As Sentimental Reasons on, there is no awareness. The whole joke is that he is not aware of his odor. There is an entire cartoon we're going to get into next about the whole thing about when he becomes aware. But him being aware takes out a lot of what makes Pepe, or what would make Pepe, a good character.
Yeah, pretty much what this short does with Pepe is it makes him a, frankly put, a typical Looney Tune antagonist, if he even is he an antagonist in this?
I don't know. But I mean, he's kind of likable, but also the other problem with this short is that the dog character doesn't have enough of a character for us to truly be behind him as a hero. So you don't really want a certain one of them to win. You're just kind of watching without a vested interest, and that's not as good.
Also, I just, in watching the cartoon, I kind of went, listen, we watched Arthur Davis's work before. We like Arthur Davis's work before. But it's weird watching Pepe Le Pew and how the camera moves and how the backgrounds are designed. It's a typical Looney Tunes cartoon done by the Arthur Davis unit. And Arthur Davis wasn't known for like big dynamic backgrounds or the telltale signs that would be in Chuck Jones's later Pepe Le Pew work. So it's this weird thing where you watch this cartoon going, something feels off here. This feels like a bizarro universe. Like, a Pepe Le Pew cartoon should not look like this. It shouldn't act like this.
It's like, I have a weird comparison to make to this because, you know the character that Richard Belzer used to play on everything? You know, Detective John Munch, he would do it on Law and Order and Homicide: Life on the Street, and It's one of the most reprised characters of all time, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, everybody who was really using him, even if he would appear on a comedy show, would get, you know, what the character was supposed to be. One time, they had him on an episode of The X-Files, and you could, like exactly, like, because the kind of thing, like, okay, this guy does, like, courtroom dramas and procedural mysteries, and yes, The X-Files is a...
My alien is innocent! He did not probe that man. We have the files. Play the X-Files, sir. I love the episode.
It's weird because like you are used to him in this sort of, you know, procedural environment, and now you have this more like, yes, X-Files is a procedural in itself. But it's a more serialized, it's darker, there's different lighting, there's more of a stylization. So taking a character that's used to, you know, just for everybody, like, dramas and procedurals and putting him in the X-Files, it's like putting him in like, you know, Batman or something. It's like, okay, the character's going to need to merge to whatever tone you have here, and it may not completely fit. And that's what it is, like, Pepe Le Pew, you know, as good of a character he is in Chuck Jones cartoons, him and an Arthur Davis cartoon, I mean, there are things that work here by the strength of Arthur Davis's unit, but mixed with Pepe as a character, it doesn't completely work all the time. And that's really a lot of the troubles with this. I mean, and also, like, the setup of the first couple of gags, they almost feel like Droopy gags, where the dog gets rid of him, he turns around, and then Pepe is there, but not even without... Pepe doesn't even say anything, he's just there, and...
It's not as fast. The
no
energy is not there to even be close to a Droopy Dog cartoon. But like, there's like weird moments in this where like, because okay, the big center gag of the short is the dog goes into the outside lake, gets frozen. And there's this one moment where Pepe Le Pew just has an axe, and he puts an axe on the ice. He's gonna cut up the ice door and get the dog out.
The shot of him like laying down with the axe about to go into the ice is fantastic, because his eyes bulge out and you see it.
Yeah, it's like deranged Pepe Le Pew. It's like, oh, I would love to see more of that. Anyways, so the dog gets free, and for a good 3 minutes of this cartoon, we just have this... One, it's funny at first, but it kind of drags, especially when we're near the end of it, where they do a unnecessary reprise, in my opinion. But at first, it's good because the dog gets a cold, and he's happy about it. It's like, oh, I can't smell the skunk. I'm just going to go right in the
house.
He's
just really coy and goofy. He's like, you know, just giving some permission.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, screw this, man. I'm out.
Yeah.
So Pepe Le Pew just throws a fucking rock through the window.
Without context, that's kind of funny, actually. It's like, oh, you have a cold, rock.
There's that note that says, like, hey, you should go to the doctor. A cold could be fatal. So he just goes through the phone book. There's, like, a bunch of gags in there. Like, oh, it's Dr. Gazoon Titan, Dr. Sneeze, or whatever.
Yeah. The Great Guild has sneezed. No.
And then just Penelope goes through the house dressed up like a doctor. And it's funny, but also had me going, like, oh, is he Bugs Bunny now? Like,
yeah.
Is that what this is now? Because it's kind of Bugs Bunny tinted.
Yeah, this seems like a Bugs gag. But I did like Pepe entering as Dr. Gesundheit and the dog just looking at us and shrugging. Like, sure, why not? And there are some decent gags here. I will say the awesome 40s gag here is Pepe yanking off the dog's face with the little like wax flypaper or whatever. Like, that's pretty good. And then the little permutations of dog we see in the steam room of just like, you know, little head, big body, or just like flat the head, just all these different very funny things. Things that must have been very fun to animate.
Yeah.
And then we get back into sort of the same cycle we've been in where Pepe throws the dog out, the dog lands in the river, and then the lake comes back. I like that he knocks on the door, enters in an ice block looking pissed. You know?
Yeah.
And the cycle kind of begins again because he gets a cold again.
Which, like, I get it, but I didn't think the gag was that funny the first time. So just having this short end with just, like, they both win!
Yeah, not really.
Like, okay. They're both gonna eventually die of this cold, I guess.
It's less of a they both win ending and more of a nobody wins ending. It's like, okay, they both kind of have a cold and they both decided to just stay in bed and that's what we're going with. Sure. You know, and the only line of dialogue they have both is they both say Gesundheit to each other, which, okay, fine. And it's not even in a Pepe accent or anything. So it's just, it's like, okay, you know, this sort of was pointless. Yeah. The single best thing this cartoon has going for it is the Arthur Davis unit's gag mentality, the fluid animation, and the quick pace. This is not a normal Pepe Le Pew cartoon, and I honestly wish he had more of a character here than just Skunk. The dog has some character, but not too much, and it's pretty a basic conflict with a basic resolution. This needed more wild ideas, and there didn't seem to be many here, and this needed better character work, especially for Pepe. Then again, it is still an Arthur Davis cartoon, so there are things to enjoy. It's just not... It doesn't work as a Pepe Le Pew cartoon.
No, not at all, really.
Nope.
I do think we could have more focus on the character work. I do think maybe some gags could have been subtracted or modified slightly. Yeah. I think we could have had a stronger ending than just... They both get sick. It's like, okay, well, then... That means only had like four gags in this whole cartoon, essentially, which isn't a lot. Decent gag mentality. I frankly have seen better from the Arthur Davis unit, but fine enough shorts.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. You know. They'd nail this character eventually. I'm giving it a 3 out of 5.
I'm also giving it a 3 out of 5 anvils.
Cool.
So let's go from barely qualifying in the character department to fully understanding who the character is and actually doing something different with it.
Yeah!
This is Really Sent. Came out on June 27th, 1959. Guards what happened on that day. Now, during this a Broadway sort of thing, so I'm not entirely sure if you know this play or not. But, is it so? Weist Sword Sorry closes at the Winter Garden
Theater. Yeah.
So a West Side Story.
I've made one or two film adaptations of that one.
Closes at the Winter Garden Theater, New York, after 734 performances and 2 Tony Award wins.
Only 734?
All he's 134. God damn it.
In 4 years, it'd win the Oscar, so I'm not worried.
Where's the pro cam? I want to see this performance. Wait a minute. There is one. It's called The Movie.
Well, you have your pick, because the original is great, and also the Spielberg version is really good.
It's really good.
I mean, look, I don't know how you can come close to the original, but Spielberg actually was able to, so, you know.
All right, so this was written by Michael Maltese, directed by Abe Levitow.
Oh.
But you would be able to tell, frankly, because this short looks amazing. This is it for a Pele Pew cartoon, like, it's legitimately, it fits the Jones style so well, given, I mean, Abe been pretty much Chuck's right-hand man for a lot of the 50s
Abe
run.
Came
it's like
Chuck, yeah.
So, yeah, so he absolutely aped the Chuck Jones style, because Chuck probably took from Abe. Who knows? Yeah. We begin with narration from no New Orleans resident, June Foray.
Wait, really?
No, I'm joking. She's doing a very big Louisiana accent to her voice performance. I'm like, yeah, sure.
Why not?
June's from New Orleans.
Sure.
As it's presenting how a father and mother cat have just had two daughters. And one of the daughters was born with a stripe upon her back that looks like the skunk. Oh, the misfortune.
Now, if this was a 40s cartoon, the cartoon would actually be the father trying to hunt and kill the skunk that slept with his wife. But no, this is a little sweeter.
Yeah, as years go by and they introduce the main conflict, which is that the skunk stripe daughter can't get a boyfriend because all the cats around New Orleans think that she's a skunk.
All the cats around New Orleans? Is that a Harry Connick Jr. lyric? And all the cats around New Orleans don't want to mess with me.
Yes. Speaking of Harry Connick Jr., Pepe Le Pew shows up in New Orleans.
Wait. What does he have to do with Harry Connick Jr.? I don't think he grabs around. Do you have allegations that the media hasn't gotten to yet, Mark? Harry's going to write in next week.
No.
I haven't grown up nobody.
No.
I was over here doing nothing.
No, it's the old Simpsons gag by Troy McClure. Like, no, I heard he can't be around fishes. No, I heard Harry Connick Jr. can't be around skunks. I don't fucking know.
Famous skunk botherer Harry Connick Jr.? What are we doing?
No idea. So, I love how as soon as Le Pew is shown out of the boat, all the people are to lose their minds. They're all just like, evict! Le Pew! And I love the wide shot of just all these people jumping off the boat.
Yes. That was pretty good.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's just Le Pew going, no, it's Le Pew! Le Pew! Where's this Pew?
That's Hedley!
So, eventually, our she has a name.
Fabrette.
So I'm just going to go with what?
Her name is Fabrette.
Fabrette. Okay. So Fabrette is walking in the park.
I don't know why I gave that as the same tone as Squeaks the Squirrel, Mark.
Jesus Christ. All right. So Fabrette is walking in the park. She's at Lover's Lane, apparently. And I love how the June Foray narration is like, wants to communicate with her. It's like, listen, I've had, like, you have to, you want a boyfriend, yes? Like, it's like, okay. So, eventually, Fabiette sees Pepe Le Pew, and she loves him, which threw me for a moment. Like, wait, what? That's not how this works.
This isn't in the script.
So, she runs towards Pepe Le Pew. Penelope runs towards her, and they embrace, and then immediately she's like, oh, he's a skunk, he stinks.
Yeah.
Of course, Penelope is doing his usual shtick, you know. Yeah.
And I love that she is interested in Pepe because she finally found, after being rejected by all these gentlemen callers, she finally finds someone who's not only exactly like her, but who seems to want her equally. It's only when she realizes Pepe is a skunk that she realizes she doesn't want him. And again, the conflict has little to do with him overstepping any boundaries and more to do with him not realizing his scent deters women. Again, this is the him not being aware of his own odor thing that I was referring to in the last one. And it powers the rest of this. Now, the only thing about this setup is that it takes half the cartoon.
So, Fabienne runs away. She hides behind a tree. And the narrator's like, oh, come on. Surely they're not going to leave. You're not going to have his stench be a reason to not go forward, right?
Yeah.
Come on, you need a boyfriend. Get out there.
I love that this cartoon has June Foray in the role of Ben Fromer Hitchcock from Last Hungry Cat. Just from the heavens going, hey, what are you doing out there? Don't you want to get murdered? That would be funny if they switched narrators for some reason. And Ben Fromer came in, hey, the cat seems to not want it. It's turning
good. Are you considered murder?
Why don't you murder him? Why not? Why not Zoidberg?
Okay. So it's like, okay, baby, just go out there. So she holds her breath, walks out, and he's like, yes, runs towards her. And this is where he says,
this must be the plays.
Oh, I didn't know Pepe Le Pew was a Talking Heads fan.
Is where I want to be, but I guess I am already there, is it not?
That's a weird inclusion on the A24 compilation of Stop Making Sense. You know, featuring Lord, Paramore, Sufjan Stevens, Pepe Le Pew. Everybody else is really good with the kids. If there's one kid person I know that is not good with Gen Z people, especially, like, hipsters, is Pepe Le Pew.
Yes. Heaven. I love it nuts. The bar is heaven, and I'm playing the cash bar.
Just a bunch of other people on the artist complaining to their publicist, like, we tried to get away from behavior by the like this.
It's just, you know Paramore's been pissed. Like,
yeah.
God damn it. How much fucking drama does my band... No, we're not going to work with him, okay?
Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go fuck my guitarist again. I think that's the one she's... maybe it's the bassist. Who knows?
Anyways. So, what I love about the sequence is the animation are bad yet. Because she changes colors. The expressions change on her face. She's losing air. She's going out of the shot back into the shot.
I like that. Just slowly exiting the shot. By the way, I want to, because I'm such a nice guy, I'd like to inform the listeners of something. You see, remember a couple minutes ago when I told Mark the name of the cat? Well, he initially retained it, and slowly he's been mumbling the name of the cat because he doesn't remember it. Because it started out like, okay, Fabrette does this. Okay, Fabrette does this. Like, you think you're going to put it back in later in the edit. Yeah. There was a priest at a wedding I went to once that I'm pretty sure was reading the name of the bride and groom from off his hand. And it's like, and we are so happy to have Dylan and Christina with us today.
How does this...
Yeah, so we see... do that...
I would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for your meddling ears and that stupid dog. Okay.
The thing about knowing somebody for 21 years is that we know each other's tells.
Yeah. God. All right. So where was I?
Australia.
Okay. Yes, of course. So, Fabrette eventually escapes Pepe Le Pew.
Yes.
And as she runs into the wax museum, correct?
I think that there's a line before she does that June Foray says that is a really, really, really good line of dialogue from Michael Maltese, which is, Fabrette, you are not going to let a little thing like breathing stand between you and happiness. And she says it perfectly as well.
Yeah, that's an incredible line.
Yeah. But yeah, there's this
bit. Wait, is the wax museum in the next short?
It might be.
It's in the next
be.
Short. There is no wax museum.
I think it is. Yeah, there is no wax museum. There's a perfume gag.
Never mind.
There's a perfume gag.
Yes,
that comes up
that's what I was going to. Okay.
Which is a perfect gag,
there's
if I might say so.
Perfume gag. Yeah, where she runs into her perfume shop, sprays it on Pepe Le Pew, and then the fumes just turn into monsters?
Yeah, the scent scares the perfume away. I love that.
So yeah, that's...
perfect.
This is a very strongly written short. It's so good. It's around this point that, Fabrette kind of leaves the short for a little bit.
Yeah.
As Pepe Le Pew is like, what's this? I don't know what's going on. Walks by a bunch of humans and everything. It's like, oh, pew. And he's like, what is this? This is pew. Why does everybody say pew? As he walks by a dictionary shop? Yeah? Is that what he walks into?
Pretty much.
A dictionary. You know, the French, and the dictionary shops. So he opens up the dictionary. He's like, oh, no, what are they talking about? And he finds out what pew means.
Ah, here it is. Pew. It means no. No, not me. C'est le ridiculous. C'est impossible de pew. No. Non pew. Pew! C'est true.
It's actually when the short becomes a pretty good Pepe Le Pew cartoon to a fucking phenomenal one.
Yeah.
Because he denies it at first.
Uh-huh.
It's like, no, that can't be. That's not what pew means. I can't possibly. And I wrote down here, he finds out what he means. Does he have a midlife crisis?
Essentially, because I initially said, like, okay, this is fascinating. Pepe has just no gauge of reality in this sense. And then once he knocks out a sewer rat, he finally begins to understand, and it crushes him. And this is genuinely excellent work that only could have happened after a good 10 or so years of making Pepe Le Pew cartoons. Like, this succeeds on the basis of other cartoons that have the same hook, and this finally builds on it. And he finally comes to this realization about himself.
So, it's at this moment that Le Pew realizes, okay, it's time to actually get this thing licked. I don't want to stink anymore. I'm going to get something done about this. So he goes to this factory that's like the deodorized. It's like a French word for deodorant that they made up for the cartoon. As he comes back to Fabrette, as the narrator comes back in going,
wait, Fabrette, if you cannot lick them, join them. Look over there.
As she finds the Luberger cheese factory. So she goes in there. And we cut to Pepe Le Pew jumping out. And he's cured of his sickness. Of his B.O. As he finds Fabrette as they embrace. It's like, yes, we can finally be together. Ooh, ooh. Mm.
So he finally knows what the other end of it feels like, because it's not something that he's used to. It's not a scent he's used to. And, it becomes the opposite, where now he's running from her, because she finally
she doesn't know he's basically taken the odor off of himself and now is chasing after him, wanting him to finally get a taste of his own medicine. And I mean, I like how this ending works. I mean, you know, the moment that Pepe realizes he needs to change to find a woman, Fabrette figures out the same thing and sticks herself up in a Limburger factory. It could have worked if only one of them realized they needed to change. Fabrette didn't need to change. This is just narrator June Foray's fault. If she hadn't have said, hey, you should go in there and stink yourself up, then we wouldn't have the conflict, and we would have actually had a happy ending in a Pepe Le Pew cartoon, which, to be fair, I think the whole point is that there isn't one. And, you know, it's still a satisfying ending without being a happy ending.
Yeah, just June Foray crying, ah, that's New Orleans! You cry, you laugh, goodbye! It's just every cartoon.
Yeah, it's and she just is like, you know, well, it's her fault. The whole thing is her fault. And she's like, oh, you never know what happens. These two have their own. She's not even, again, like Pepe, she's not even realizing she's at fault. So the cycle continues again. I shouldn't be making these really analytical, well thought out points about a cartoon, about a Pepe Le Pew cartoon.
No, and that's the weird thing.
Yeah.
What is the, it's a story that takes the tropes of Pepe Le Pew and discusses the methods in which he does indeed stink, while also having a female love interest who would like to be in a relationship with him but can't? How is this the most detailed and storied Pepe Le Pew short I've ever seen? I
wow!
Yeah. So pretty much what I'm saying is, folks, we don't need a 2020 short where Pepe Le Pew finds himself and aims to be better. Michael Maltese figured that shit out in 1959.
Yeah, we don't need someone like Max Landis to try and do that. No, we have this.
No. Yeah.
Whoa, man. Like, you know, from a conceptual standpoint, this is really fascinating, this cartoon. Because instead of the same old things, we have an actual subversion of how these cartoons usually work, with Pepe actually realizing his own faults. That doesn't happen in other cartoons. I mean, and in the end, Pepe actually does the right thing, but it comes at such an awful time, as Fabrette is too young to realize that she shouldn't have to change for him. It's one of the most thoughtful Pepe Le Pew cartoons ever made, and one that's way more complex than just Pepe doesn't understand consent.
The gift of the Magi, is it not? Alright. So I'm going to give this an anvil rating of 4 out of 5 anvils.
That's exactly what I am giving it. It's probably one of the best Pepe Le Pew cartoons out there, because it actually does something. And! And on that note, one that doesn't.
Back to the status quo!
So we have Wild Over You, or Wild About You, if you're Mark at the top of the show. This one came out on July 11th, 1953. I found two interesting on this day birthdays. One is Leon Spinks, who famously defeated Muhammad Ali in one of the biggest boxing upsets in history in 1979. And was the heavyweight champion for a while until he had to give up his title for challenging Muhammad Ali to another fight in a non-contested bat. Boxing has weird rules. But yeah, him. And also Mindy Sterling, who...
Name.
Yeah, Groundlings legend, California improv legend. You probably know her best. She was Frau Farbissima in the Austin Powers movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you want to talk about a character that makes those movies, Mindy Sterling as Frau definitely makes those movies. Because it's just a play on Rosa Klebb in From Russia With Love, and she makes it into a much sillier, much more like Mel Brooks, much more Cloris Leachman in a Mel Brooks movie kind of character. And it's fantastic. Yeah. I couldn't imagine anybody else doing it. But yeah, she's had bit roles in a million different things. And she's usually really funny when she shows up. But yeah, Wild Over You, directed by Chuck Jones. It's weird that we're doing a Pepe episode and only one of them was directed by Chuck Jones.
written by Michael Maltese. It's funny because the last episode was a directorial credit by Ave Levitau. Ave Levitau, this is his first animation credit on a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Oh!
So that's pretty cool.
Wow!
So this one, do you have any other effect?
Only that when I was watching the beginning of this cartoon, I was reminded of another Pepe Le Pew cartoon we covered on this show.
Which one?
Well, it's the one where he's in the zoo and he has his own exhibit and he wants to be free.
I vaguely remember that one.
Right, because I say that because we also begin in the French zoo in the 1900s.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're in the 1900s. Like,
why not?
Nothing period. That. Sure.
It's weird because like there's a lot of weird design things I noticed in the beginning of this. Like, first of all, like a lot of them are lawful weird fun. Like, they're the one guy that brings a sandwich but with little briefcase handles, which I need to invest in those because, you know, if you have a really big sandwich and you want to take it places, then, you know, invest in sandwich handles, you know. Just make sure the handles can secure whatever's in the sandwich. You know, you don't want anything falling out the between the buns. So, and then you also have like just some fun Jonesian designs, like a whole like a nun carrying a bunch of girls that are all in descending sizes, which is like a more nightmarish version of Madeline. And then why are the cages so small in this French zoo? Did they run out of money during the war?
Oh no, we used all the metal to make the missiles. Now our cages are for ants. I don't know. Because it's funny to see an elephant in a small cage.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but of course, you know, the conflict of this one is that the exhibit on the wildcat is awry because the wildcat has escaped, and everyone's panicking. And I did like the timing of the crowd of people running out of the zoo, and then after a moment, the mother and child following. It's just a bee's like, oh yeah, we should probably follow them running out of the zoo. I mean, look, this isn't as stylized in terms of character as some of Jones's 60s stuff, but there are some good designs. Like, there's the shot of the dog catcher and the sniffing dog looking for the wildcat, and then just the flatness of this dog is so goofily stylized, I have to respect it.
Yeah, so we're introduced to our wildcat creature, who, interesting design on this wildcat creature. Not just, like, Penelope in a different color. Like, this is indeed a different character than Penelope would be. And, so she's obviously, she shouldn't be very fierce. She sees the catcher, she tries to hide from it. Would you look at that? Someone in France is painting a Beetlejuice tent. So she takes the black and white. Any moment now, WB. Drop that trailer at any time.
It'll be out by the time that this drops, definitely. Like, it's gonna be like 3 days after we record, they're gonna, you know.
So they dropped that trailer, but not Coyote versus Zach. Anyway!
Hey, what did we say about mentioning that? I gotta draw a line in the fucking sand, people.
You just take out like a long cane through my computer, like.
The slapstick of that. That's a Looney Tunes gag for you.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. So, she paints herself as a skunk. The hunter and the dog are thrown off, and now we have a cartoon. So, someone's a skunk, and here comes in by Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah, this is probably the most famous Pepe passes singing and kills off of all the flowers intro for him. You know, we've seen it on Golden Collection behind the tunes, I think. Now, and this, what we're getting at here is that this very quickly becomes a very normal Pepe Le Pew cartoon. In that, you know, of course, Pepe tries to seduce the wildcat, and the wildcat doesn't want it. And the only real... There is an opportunity for a subversion because, unlike Penelope, this is a cat that could actually, you know, wound or kill
Pepe. Kill Pepe Le Pew.
But the thing is that because, despite the fact that it would be funny if, you know, she diced up Pepe, that doesn't really have that much of effect, and it doesn't really affect Pepe's approach. And so it's basically the same tactics and going about as any other Pepe Le Pew cartoon, even if the intensity meter of the pursuit is heightened.
The cartoon is on Pepe Le Pew's side.
Yes.
That's why.
It is.
And if the cartoon, if this show is more focused on, this is a wildcat, this is how they live, the wildcat escapes because they want to be free, then, oh no, here comes Pepe Le Pew. Then we may have some, something different, but also that's an entirely different cartoon than what we have right now. This is, from the get-go, the very first shot, it's a Pepe Le Pew cartoon. He has a character credit in this short. So right from the get-go, this short is on Pepe Le Pew's side, and as such, Pepe Le Pew can't die. This is very typical. I mean, there are gags here, but like, they're all gags we've seen before. Like,
pretty much.
Anything like new that really stuck out to you?
I mean, there was a gag that I liked. There was a line that I liked, at least, because there's the whole thing where Pepe discusses a fortune teller and says, oh, you're going to come across a tall, dark stranger. And then, you know, she runs out and she runs into Pepe in another costume going, amazing how those fortune tellers always know, is it not? I like that.
I love that because I love, because, like, where do you find those costumes?
It just has a whole handbag.
It's like immediately, just has them on site.
It takes them like only a second to change into half of them.
The one bit I did like, because they go into a wax museum, found it. This is where the wax museum is. And for a moment, I thought they were going to do a joke where like, oh, Pepe Le Pew is so bad, his scent melts.
Me too, actually.
Melts the wax from the, which doesn't happen. Which,
no, it doesn't.
Okay, fine.
Restraint.
Yeah, but I do like this bit where the wildcat goes into a knight's armor. And we just see Pepe's eyes. And then the line,
hello, baby. Close quarters, no?
I liked that, too.
That's a good Pepe Le Pew in close spaces with the,
just slinking out the eyes of people, like, hello, baby. And the great animation of the suit of armor going all over the place when they struggle. It's great.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's, you know, it's a Pepe Le Pew cartoon.
Yeah, I got nothing else until the final gag, really.
Yeah, not me too.
So. Let's jump into the final gag.
Yeah.
So, so the wildcat finds a hot air balloon, jumps into the hot air balloon, separates herself. She thinks she's safe. Matt just watch it going, 3, 2, what? Oh, there,
yeah,
he is.
There he is.
As she claws out, at him, as he pokes his head out and goes like, hey, don't lick it if you haven't tried it.
Yeah. Not great. And there's no real resolution, just it keeps happening again, and that's the cartoon.
Which, honestly, I know a better end line they could have used, and it's in this cartoon, because I see it over time, but it's a really good line where, I don't know what situation that, like, they go into, like, this old carriage that used to belong to somebody.
Yeah.
And she calls up Pepe again, leaves, and then Pepe has this great line of,
I ask myself, Pepe, is it worth it? I answer myself, yes, yes, it is worth it, Pepe. Vive l'amour!
That would be a better ending line.
That was a better end line than what they actually put in. I feel if they switched those two lines, I'm not sure would have improved the cartoon much, but would have left it on a better ending out.
Gotcha. But yeah, it just sort of ends.
Much like our coverage of this cartoon, it just kind of ends.
Yeah, yeah, just sort of, and that's the end. But yeah, this one, it felt like it was going to be more than basic, but it was pretty basic. You know, some good moments, some funny moments, some classic Pepe moments, but not a lot going for it compared to other Pepe cartoons. It sort of ran out of steam in the second half, and that's kind of why we just sort of bobbed around for a couple minutes talking about the ending.
It's so fucking weird, because, like, wow, look how they're able to obstruct and tell a different story of Pepe Le Pew. And they cut to this one, and it's like, oh, okay. Which, given, this short did come first, before, before the next story we covered here. But, yeah, just your typical Pat the Pew fare. Not terrible. He's not that much of a creep in this one. So I'll give it that. But that's about it.
I give this one a 3 out of 5, you know?
Yeah, I'm also giving it a 3 out of 5 animals.
All right, we were on the same page today. Somehow. All right. Let's see what you guys have to say about these Pepe Le Pew cartoons. All right. Unsurprisingly, a lot of people out there have things to say about Pepe Le Pew cartoons. We have Termite Terrace Club at Looney Terrace, who says, Odor of the Day is another Arthur Davis get. I don't know. A get is a noun now. And it gave Pepe Le Pew a rare slapstick role that gives him more to do. Yeah, really sent some... It gives him some things to do. I don't think we were wild about all the things it had him to do because...
We weren't wild about the things that he did do.
Yeah, yeah. There wasn't enough of a character there. It's just like, oh, it's a skunk. It needed more meat on it, I think, that one. Really sent subverts the formula, and it's very sweet and sincere. Yeah, we love that one. Wild Over You tops the premise of Odorable Kitty, and the Wildcat gets the best of him. Yeah. He also goes on to say, Odor of the Day and Really Sent should be looked at as means to update Pepe Le Pew for modern times, not only to update Pepe and Penelope as a fully fledged couple that can play off their own differences, but as a duo can provide with their own style of comedy, slapstick. Yeah. No, I agree. Those are, especially Really Sent, ones like that should be thought of when trying to revitalize this character, because it's not just about Pepe being skeevy and not understanding consent. There's actually more complexity there, and it's more about character.
Absolutely. So we also have a comment from Trixie at Trixie Toons, who says that Odor of the Day is a really, really fun and cute short. And it's fun to see Pepe, if you want to consider the skunk to be Pepe. I know it's debatable, but I like to think it is.
It's not quite there, but whatever you guys want, though.
In fun and cartoonishly comedic situations outside of his usual formula. So what I'm getting from all these comments, a lot of people said this, is they're finding Odor of the Day, while yes, the character isn't quite Pepe Le Pew, doing that sort of style could be a good way to bring Pepe Le Pew back into the fold. And okay. That I get it, but also something that I said in our Odor of the Day coverage is that, I mean, if they could do Odor of the Day but have him have the Pepe Le Pew character in some way or form, sure. Our issue with Odor of the Day was that the skunk had no character. But if they were able to find this Goldilocks zone of he's over the top and cartoony, but he's also kind of still Pepe Le Pew without making it seem like it's just a different character entirely, I don't know. That could be something. I'm not entirely sure what. But that could be something. Trixie goes on to say, Really Sent might be the objectively best Pepe short. The story is just so good. And it's wonderful seeing Penelope or Fabrette. Did I get it right?
Yes, you got it right!
Yay. Get the spotlight. Pepe and Penny genuinely feel like they're in love with this one. Fabrette. Right. It's Fabrette, Trixie.
No. She meant Penelope, I think. But
yeah, Penelope. It's all good. Tracy goes on to say about Wild Over You. It's their absolute favorite Pepe Le Pew short of all time. Okay. Because, one, it has the wild cat, and she's amazing. Okay, the wild cat's a good foe. I really, really love the French exposition setting for the backgrounds.
Yeah, there's some good stuff there.
Makes sense. And Pepe has some adorable quotes and lines, which, you know what?
Good
yeah, he absolutely does. I know there are some great lines in this cartoon, and I absolutely agree.
Looney's Tunes has a really good point here. For me, the Pepe shorts are better when the one he's chasing fights back or has an attitude. Penelope was like this in her first few shorts, before mostly getting reduced to just being scared or running. So Wild Over You is a great breath of fresh air. Yeah, I agree with that, because you have this cat character who isn't just, you know, not getting it, but like is like, no, you know, actually has something to say about it, you know, pushes Pepe around. You know, it's more than just, you know, hard to watch, you know, not getting it shit.
All right. We have a comment from Justin at Justin1194, who says, it's a bit off topic, but he wants to know what would have happened if D DFE / McKimson could have done a Pepe cartoon. DFE?
I don't know. But if he means McKimson doing a Pepe cartoon, I mean, the Chuck Jones ones, you know, they're good enough because at least Chuck Jones is writing them. But if McKimson got to do them, they would have somehow been worse.
I think so, because like we've already established that McKimson has a tendency of putting anti-women shit in his shorts.
Yeah, so as if the Pepe shorts could be any more anti-women. There's a lot of people actually, like a lot of people had a lot of things to say about Odor of the Day specifically. Just to go through a couple of them. Our friend Cody at Whisper of Sea says, love Odor of the Day. A shame they didn't experiment more with Pepe outside the romance. Similarly, Oscar Smith at Oscar Smith, a bunch of numbers, says, Odor of the Day makes me wish that Pepe Le Pew was more of a slapstick character than what he's known for today. And I think, again, enough of that I agree with because it's more than just what the character's known for. And if they can have other uses for him while keeping the character intact, then I agree that it could work.
Yeah. John also at John Athenstein. Stein? I'm sorry, I can't pronounce that. Yeah. Yes. Odor of the Day is definitely an oddball short featuring a Pepe, but not really skunk character. It's a very entertaining short, but it's very obvious that it wasn't made to be a Pepe short initially. Still a great short, though, which, hey, absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Garth's Really Sent. John says, I often considered the best Pepe short with all his fans, myself included. Wow. This short gives a clear answer to how to modernize Pepe to be more appropriate, air quotes, for today's audiences. Sincerely sweet and honestly very wholesome while still having an edge, top tier short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As for Wild Over You, John says, the idea that Pepe is still head over heels over someone who beats the ever-loving shit out of him and in fact is into that kind of stuff is both weird but hilarious. Pepe's costumes, the little comments after each fight are the highlights. Yeah, right. That is great.
Yeah.
At least fortune tellers, man, they're always correct. Overall, these three are really great shorts. Even Odor of the Day is solid despite its disconnect from the formula / character. Really Sent is the best for showing people the genuine nature of these characters and how they can easily exist in these modern times.
No, these are all really good points, yeah.
Over onto the Instagram. We have a comment from Jacob Isenga at Real Jacob Isenga, who says, Odor of the Day is a fun short, even if it being Pepe is ambiguous, but I think it's him. Yeah. It's definitely an underrated short that could be a blueprint for how WB can use him nowadays, since it doesn't involve his typical shtick. Pepe weaponizing his odor is definitely something new, since usually he's oblivious to it, so definitely proves that they can change Pepe up. Really Sent is my all-time favorite short and probably least controversial. Yeah. Since it shows Pepe and Penelope being in love from the start and demonstrates how much they are willing to do for each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, it provides a little backstory for Penelope, or Fabrette, as she's called here. It doesn't get brought up much, arguably making her the main character for that short with Pepe being a supportive character. Yeah. Honestly, that's also probably a good direction to take it. Just like have Penelope be like the lead and then Pepe just shows up.
Yeah, yeah, that would be a nice approach, I think, especially now.
All their interactions are super cute throughout. I'll say this one is better than For Sentimental Reasons and deserves to see more physical releases. Okay, well, it is on the Looney Tunes Superstar DVD, which I'm pretty sure you have, Jacob. But it could probably be on like a Warner Archive Blu-ray as a cartoon special feature. Wild Over You is a fun one because we get to know about Pepe's taste. Which explains why getting hit doesn't deter him. That's just the thing. Did we even pick up on this? That Pepe Le Pew in that cartoon has some sort of like.
I hope we did.
I don't think we did.
Really?
So thanks, guys. Yeah. And marvel at how they got all that past the Hays Code. Well, I think at that time, fetishes didn't really exist in the public knowledge. The Hays Code even knew what a fetish was.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, my goodness. And, whew. We also have a comment here from AJ Gugino 44, who says, I actually think Odor of the Day is what Pepe should have been. A smart, I like it, screwy skunk. Trying to survive without dialogue. Plus, the standalone short is quite entertaining. And Arthur Davis is a great director for the short time he had.
Yeah, I agree with you on Arthur Davis. I just don't agree on the actual short.
Yeah, which is, you know, that's fine. And from Late Cat Productions, which has Penelope as their profile pitch. So big Penelope fan over here.
Yeah.
Says, Order of the Day wasn't really my cup of tea. Okay. Right. I suppose Pepe is a more slapstick-oriented short could work, but it just didn't cut it here. Definitely one of the weaker Arthur Davis shorts.
Huh. Well, I mean, yeah, but it's still an Arthur Davis short, so it still looks great and it still moves really well.
Yeah, it has some merits. Really, Scent is my all-time favorite Looney Tunes short. Yeah. Hey, oh yeah. It's a nice subversion from the traditional Pepe formula. It's always nice to see Penelope wanting to be with Pepe despite his horrid stench being the main obstacle, especially here. Yeah. Very cute and bittersweet, mainly because external forces seem to prevent them from being together in the end. Wild Over You is alright enough. rather than Penelope, Pepe is chasing a wildcat, the formula plays out the same. Just kind of seems to blend in with the crowd. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's our thoughts exactly. Voices Man 63 replied to Lee Cat Productions saying that if we're talking slapstick Pepe, I like to see him in a show where his foil is the total opposite. I'd say like a Daffy Duck, who while Pepe is more easygoing and just kind of oblivious all around, Daffy is hot-headed, crazy, and extremely self-centered. My friend said Yosemite would make for a good antagonist for Pepe Le Pew also.
Well, who would I root for then?
Where the lying skunk of a rabbit go? As mes amis, what the hell?
Yeah.
Says skunk is a nut. Okay. And finally, on the That's Not Quite All Folks Patreon, we do have a comment from Judy.
Yes.
All right. They are very big, very big fans. So here we go. Judy says, Pepe is actually one of my favorite characters. Quote, I do not condone his actions, though. Because I love cheesy romantic shit.
I do not condone his
actions. That's a big reason why one of this week's episodes is a favorite of mine. Aren't the episodes themselves? Judy has only seen Order of the Day twice, and at first it was kind of meh, but upon the second watch, she's warmed up to it a little. Not much to say about it other than I thought the ending was cute. Really, Scent, on the other hand, I absolutely adore this short.
Yeah,
it's not often you see him and Penelope, or Fabrette, I guess, portrayed as being in an actual relationship, and it's so refreshing to see, in my opinion. The fact that Pepe realized the smell was a problem and did something to fix it to make her happy? Like, we've never seen this amount of self-awareness from Pepe, and I'm like, hello? Who are you?
Yeah!
And she decided to make herself smell like him so he'll be happy?
Yeah!
I thought exactly, like, what? This isn't the script in the Pepe Le Pew cartoons go. Listen, I don't get emotional over Looney Tunes cartoons, but this, I just can't. Whenever I feel bad, I just rewatch this short because, damn, it's just too cute. Instead of getting rid of the character, why can't they make more stuff like this? As for Wild Over You, I'm more looking forward to hearing our thoughts on it.
Oh, yeah,
because
you'll like
that. Judy just knows it's going to be entertaining. Oh, it's a good cartoon and all. Judy enjoys it, but Judy's baffled it exists. Like, how did this get the green light?
It was a different time, you know. We were making that for ourselves. Some of us were into that kind of shit.
Just the idea of it is wild to me. Like, oh yeah, one of the Looney Tunes characters is canonically into
masochism?
Masochism, thank you. That's a sentence I never thought I'd say, but here we are. And Jordan, how did you know how to pronounce that perfectly?
Because I'm a man of the world.
Okay. Yeah. So
thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Wow. It's been 30 minutes. You got a lot to say about this, guys. That was great. Thank you. I'm going to go have a bath now. Before we get to what we're covering next week, I would like to take this opportunity to thank our Patreon subscribers. That's right. We have a Patreon. If you didn't know about it, you know now. On Patreon, you can subscribe to That's Not Quite All Folks and get plenty of goodies, such as commentaries, bonus material, full uncut episode logs, and lots of fun stuff that you will get the opportunity to have at a $1 level or a $5 level. And I would just like to thank our current patrons, including Andrew, Triscrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the person, not the drink, my cousin Neil,
and Judy M. for giving to this wonderful podcast. And if you'd like to be a part of that, go to patreon.com/TNQAF. Trust me, it'll be worth it. All right, this one is one you've been excited for a while, Mark. So,
yeah, and you know, and what's so funny is that, you know, we've covered a Pepe Le Pew cartoon where it's kind of sort of not really Pepe Le Pew. Well, for next week's episode, we're doing that, except for a much bigger character. It wasn't even planned. That's the best part. Anyway, so for next week's episode...
No, I'm kidding.
So for next week's episode, and it's a four-shorter. We're having four shorts in this one, because it is a lineage, it is a journey, and I want to capture all of it. So what we're doing next week... are covering the early incarnations of Bugs Bunny. Now, you may be thinking, but June Bugs was last year. Well, why are you doing this? Because during June Bugs, I believe, I saw a lot of people online pointing out how, oh, hey, April is actually what should be celebrated as Bugs Bunny's birthday, because that's when the early prototypes of those characters came out. I saw those takes and I went, no, I'm going to respectfully disagree. And to show how much I'm respectfully disagreeing, we're going to be looking at four shorts that cover the prototypical nature of Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
So these shorts that we are covering next week are Porky's Hare Hunt.
Okay.
Presto Changeo. Harum Scarum. Which is a very popular short that came out in the last couple years. Ending with Elmer's Pet Rabbit.
Okay, cool. So these are at least different depictions that... I think all of these are well-known in some way, regardless of taste or regardless of how well they've held up. They're definitely listed in some, you know, logs of the first Bugs Bunny short, despite, you know, it not being completely Bugs yet. But it's important that we cover these just to get the chronology of the character and, you know, understand what didn't work and how we get to different things.
And Jordan, don't worry. I've guaranteed that in 2 weeks, we're going to be doing an episode that you are really passionate about.
Well, I know what that means, so hopefully something else is going to happen that gets pushed. So if Wiley, if Coyote vs. Acme gets announced, we're just going to do that. you will find, like, oh, someone sneezed, we're pushing the episode.
Dude, Jerry Pegasus go, oh yeah, and like late April, we're going to release Collector's Choice Volume 4. I'm like, God damn it!
It would be so funny if that was the case.
It would be. It really would be.
It would be hysterical. We should just keep pushing it just because we can.
So stay tuned next week for our prototypical look at Bugs Bunny. That is the end of this week's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHalem1995.
And you can follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
If you like to go with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow @that_loony both on Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find our podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon Music. We have a YouTube channel where we post bits and clips from episodes. We also post shorts, which we put on our TikTok account, which we have for some reason. If the government has anything to do with it, we probably won't for that much longer. Also, if you...
Hey!
I don't like that that's happening, but it might fucking happen. Also, if you want to support the podcast, go to www.patreon.com/TNQAF and pledge as much as you want to help us out.
And folks, we have the data. Jordan's saying that for the past 100 however many episodes of the Patreon has actually led some of you to go visit our Patreon page. So thank you so much for even visiting it and seeing what we got to provide. Thank you so much.
Yes, exactly.
So, until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan, and I'm going to, what's that, June 4, narrator? Jump off a cliff? Don't mind if I do.